O great sage representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitiveness in all that I have inquired from you, and all that I may not have inquired from you from the very beginning of my questionings. Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. Purport. Okay, then Prabhupada says, the spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple. Okay, spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple. And specifically, when the disciple is very inquisitive. This whole purport's about this kind of like epistemology. How do we know? Like that. And because he's pretty much when he's finished his questions, and now we're starting to hear him like, you know, putting them all into perspective. You know? And so we have on a picture, we have Krishna talking to Arjuna. And of course, that reminded us of this famous phrase, there's no atheists in foxholes. So there are many stories of soldiers and so on in a certain situation, you know, praying to God. You know, and they became very inquisitive at that point to know if there really was a God. And so Arjuna's situation is like that. Socrates, same thing, very famous dialogue. It's called the Phaedo, Phaedo. It's nice to read. You know? And that's when he's about to take the poison. You know, so his disciples are asking questions at that point. And he says that at this point we can't be be criticized or talking about idle mental speculation because the glass of poison is right in front of us. You know? So on and on like that. Of course, Mars, Parikshit. So many times we're being driven, you know, by Krishna's arrangement, by the laws of nature to become inquisitive. You know? And if we can actually become inquisitive because of our intelligence, you know, our own motivation without having to be faith. First-class person understands by hearing. You know, so we can hear from the scriptures the importance of our situation. We can get ourselves motivated that way by hearing properly. Okay. Other than that, a second-class person actually has to see. So we see people being involved in wars on the television, we see these problems, and then we become, you know, very, very inquisitive. Or finally, the third-class situation is where we have to be motivated by actually being put into a situation where we're asking questions. I also remember Leonard Cohen has one song. I think it said, Jesus was a sailor until he walked upon the water, and until he knew for certain only drowning men could see him. So that's a point that the Bhagavad Gita has also made, that only when we're fully materially exhausted can we actually seriously ask questions like that. So that's the first thing we noticed here in the purport. The spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to a disciple, and specifically when the disciple is very inquisitive. So this whole thing we have to ask ourselves again and again, how inquisitive are we? Next slide, number 6. Inquisitiveness on the part of a disciple is greatly necessary. Reminds me of Madan Mohan's comments, greatly necessary for the progressive disciple. Of course, we can be non-progressive disciples. Again, Madan's point, and we can just be caught up at whatever level. We come into devotional service from a previous lifetime. We went through Adoshada, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, and then we died. And we come back, and very quickly, we get to Anartha Nivritti very quickly. But then we don't make any progress. And we just kind of sit there, you know, trying to get rid of our anarthas. Or we actually came to the point of nishtha. You know? So if we're going to be progressive disciples, then Prabhupada is saying that inquisitiveness is greatly necessary. And I look at myself again and again. I see I see a horse in the mirror. That is what the joke was. I see how greatly inquisitive am I. You know? Maharaj Parikshit is a typical disciple because he is perfectly inquisitive. Wow. Okay. Next slide. Number 7. If one is not very inquisitive about self-realization, one need not approach a spiritual master simply to make a show of discipleship. So, of course, the Nectar of Instruction Prabhupada mentions this several times. He mentions this. that this is a social formality approaching the spiritual master. You know, tasma guru prapajita jignasya seya uttama. Yeah, that when we're inquisitive, actually inquisitive, then we should approach guru. Other than that, we approach guru because, you know, we'll be condemned by our society unless we do it, unless we have bar mitzvah, or we declare in front of, you know, people that we are, that Muhammad's the only prophet, or we take baptism in the Christian church, or we take diksha, you know. And so even in ISKCON, you know, as our society grows and we get different people, like, they may want to take initiation because it gives them some peace of mind for liberation, some feeling that I'm not going to go to hell, you know. It gives them some economic, social position like that, you know, some comfort in being a part of the society. You know? But are we really inquisitive? Inquisitive about self-realization. I remember one time we were in San Francisco and there was a Gujarati mandal there. Prabhupada actually went to it, by Gujarati community. And some of one of our members later got initiated, one of congregation members, nice person. He said, "Oh, there's one Sadguru coming, Swamiji. Brahmachariji. Hanuma Prashakdas. You should come see him. He's coming to the Gujarati Mandal." So myself, I think, and two more Brahmacharis went over there, and we were sitting down before him, before the Sadguru came, maybe in the afternoon. And some other Indian people were there, and they were going to receive him. You know? And one of his disciples, or somebody who stayed at his ashram in India for some time, was there. So he started talking to him. And I was going to ask him, "Well, what's your conception, you know, of the absolute truth?" But then, as I was talking to him, I couldn't even ask the question, because the guy hadn't the slightest idea that there even was an absolute truth. And if I asked the question, I had this feeling he would just have a nervous breakdown or something like that, you know. And all of his discussions of his guru was, "Well, I was in the ashram for 3 months and it felt really good," and different things like that, you know. So there was not even, so without some knowledge coming from the guru, from Parampara, we can't even get to this position, you know, of understanding that self-realization is possible. In Anamaya, we realize that we are the body, and to eat everything, to eat, consider everything as the object of eating is the goal of life. Such a first realization. I am the world, you know. Anamaya, pranamaya. In pranamaya, I begin to realize I have an individual life. It's called the terrible twos in child psychology. And so if somebody tries to cut my hair, or someone tries to flush my excrement down the toilet, or someone tries to take my clothes or my toys, you know, it's World War V. You know, I have all this. Because now I'm starting to identify myself as different from the world. So now my self-realization comes to the point of realizing I am this body. I'm advanced. I mean, self-realization is I am this body. Yeah. Then later on, monodharma, monomaya, then my self-realization becomes, oh, this body belongs to a certain psychological complex. I'm from Chile. I'm from Peru. I'm a woman. I'm a man. I'm male. I'm female. I'm a boy. I'm a girl. I'm a, you know, upper social class, lower social class. So, so many things of monodharma, and we've got to figure out and realize our identity, you know. So even after we come to the point of immortality, there's so many different levels of self-realization. You know? So we have to have some idea about coming down of what is the possibility of self-realization. And then it's very interesting because we're not just fingers detached from the hand. When we get reconnected, we act like robots. No, what to speak of merging into the whole. You know, we have our own free will, our own potency, and then we have to use that. And we have to use that. We have to be very inquisitive about self-realization. Otherwise, if we're just approaching for this monodharma, you know, finding some comfortable position, you know, then we're not going to be able to achieve any kind of higher goal. In the picture, we see here that Maharaj Parikshita has given up his clothes. Yeah. It's interesting, I'm looking at this closer, but he hasn't shaved up. You know, I'm not sure how serious he is. And also he has a very stylish mustache still, you know. Yeah. It's kind of interesting, the picture there. Yeah. inquisitive. Okay, number eight. Not only is Maharaj Pariksit inquisitive concerning all he has inquired about, but he is also anxious to know about what he has not been able to inquire. So it's very more advanced position. Nice, no? Because I see everybody has blind spots. And I look all around me, this person, they have this problem with, you know, they react in disproportion to this situation. You know, they act like this, they act like that. They don't know that's how people perceive them. So I look around and I see everybody has blind spots. As though, therefore, with a little logic, and I can understand that I also must have blind spots. You know? And so, therefore, my question should be, you know, open to hearing things that I don't know about. There are things that I have to hear about which I don't know. It's not enough that I ask my questions, but I also have to ask about, are there things that I should learn that I don't know about? He was also anxious to know about what he has not been able to inquire. Factually, Prabhupada says, it is not possible for a man to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. But the bona fide spiritual master is able to enlighten the disciple in every way for the disciple's benefit. So very, very nice point here. Prabhupada says, factually, it is not possible for a man to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. So that was a point I was going to go on with a little bit more here. On the pictures here, we have on the right, one picture of Prabhupada talking with Hansa Duda and Bhakti Bhushan Swami. I think he was in Brahmachari name. It'll come back later. Anyway, so you know, Prabhupada, I had like a lot of association with Hansa Duda in Berkeley and stuff. And so from him, I had, you know, to him, of course, also his experiences with Prabhupada and so on, and how Prabhupada was dealing with him in so many hours and so many situations like that. So Prabhupada was able, like Prabhupada says here, to enlighten the disciple in every way, you know, for his benefit. So next slide. Number nine. So here, to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. To inquire about everything. Prabhupada said it's impossible to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. Number 10. Okay. So what do we actually inquire about then? You know? Because I noticed one time I was trying to read all of Prabhupada's books, not just read them, but like, you know, grasp them and catch them all. And of course, what do we have? We have, you know, it was 35 volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, 2 volumes in the Krishna book.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
The slide that we have right now, which is 10, it shows the deities in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It says Berkeley, San Francisco, 75.
That's the one.
Okay, sorry.
No, sorry. It's good. Yeah. So, you know, all these books, you know, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Krishna book, Teachings of the Lord Chaitanya, those are got Yusopanishad, and then volumes of room conversations and morning walks. I think it's about 35 volumes. Bhagavad Gita lectures, Bhagavatam lectures, letters. So all together, maybe, what, 100 books, you know? And so I was trying to comprehend, grab all these. Then I read, the Prabhupada says, no disciple can take everything the spiritual master has to offer. You know? And I thought, oh my God, wow. And then later on in one lecture I heard Prabhupada saying, even in 100 years, you cannot possibly read all these books completely. So that was a lot of relief, you know. So right to this point then is that the inquisitive disciple can't possibly understand everything, you know, from the spiritual master. So very important then is that one of the questions should be is what should I ask? You know, what area should I do? So very in general, you know, Prabhupada made this statement several times, but specifically he said, we should know a lot about one thing and a little bit about everything. Of course, this is kind of like the different blind men approaching the elephant. One blind guy grabs a leg, one blind guy grabs a tail, one guy grabs the nose, one guy grabs the ear, one guy grabs the tusk, One guy hits the side of the elephant. So one says, oh, I know what the elephant is. It's a spear. Oh, no, you blind man. It's a snake. No, it's a tree trunk. Oh, you're all wrong. It's like a big wall. No, it's like a rope. So if we have little faith and trust in other people's inquiries from the spiritual master and can evaluate them, we know how to evaluate them, you know. Different, our god brothers, like Hansaduda or someone, or Sudamana Maharaj or Jayananda, after getting to know them, then when they would tell me Prabhupada did this, said that, did this, I could understand, you know, better, because I knew them and I knew how they saw Prabhupada. Some of them had the nose, some had the tail. Yeah. And so then all together, Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, by really trying to understand our particular perspective, then we begin to see the whole perspective simultaneously. That, so on. So one thing about what is our perspective? How can we know Krishna? How should we know Prabhupada? And how we can cooperate then, you know, to serve Krishna by having inquiries about different perspectives like that. So I remember very specifically one time in terms of my particular attitude and perspective. Prabhupada was in Berkeley in San Francisco for the Rath Yatra, like in, maybe August or something, September of 1975. And remember, he said, anyone who chants Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadhar, Srivas, Adgaur Bhaktivrinda, and follows it with Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, has achieved the perfection of life. Right? But if you want to preach, you should probably study my books. Yeah. And so Prabhupada has mentioned that other times too. He said this whole movement can be based upon these two mantras, Panchatattva and Hare Krishna. So from my perspective, I especially took that very, very intensely. I have this sannyas karma. You know, somebody else has some other kind of karma. And it's both a blessing and a curse. It has its good and its bad aspects. And so I tend to minimize everything. You know, keep everything the most simple. Renounce everything. Of course, sometimes the problem is you renounce things to the inefficiency. You become so simple that you're actually inefficient. You know. Or actually making mistakes. But anyway, that's one perspective that, you know, we inquire from the spiritual master. Hear Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. Hear Prabhupada chanting the Panchatattva mantra. Chant ourselves as much as possible, kirtan, jap. In any situation, we can take shelter, you know, of Panchatattva mantra and of the Hare Krishna mantra. You know. On the Brajmandal Parikrama, did that like so many times. One of the biggest journeys we did. And I stopped counting it 7 or 8 times. And it can be very austere. It can be. It is almost always very, very austere. Because you're camping out in the fields. You don't come back at night. You know, so many things happening. So much physical pressure. I think I mentioned there were 5 German infantry soldiers on the Parikrama 1 year. I think the 3rd year I was there or something. And they said that if you can do this parikrama, you can be a German infantry soldier, like that. So then maybe a year later, I had one guy along. He was a Green Beret from Spain. And I asked him, is that true, you know, the intensity of this? And he thought about it, and he said, well, actually, we, in our Green Beret training, we never did anything on a prolonged basis more intense than this. He said, for some times, we would just, you know, do things more intense, like from time to time. But in a prolonged austerity, he said, no, never did anything more intense than this. You know? So very difficult. And sometimes your false ego starts to come out. Oh, you can really see it. You know, it's like a dog, you know, with you, ready to bite everybody and do all these kind of things. And you've always got to keep it under control. You know, there's no gratification for it. It's like I got this mantra. In Vrindavan, only Krishna and Balaram kill demons. so many times I would be ready just to murder somebody, you know, so upset. And the mantra would come to my salvation in Vrindavan, only Krishna and Balaram kill demons. You know? And everybody else just chants, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. And if they want to empower you to kill a demon, okay. Yeah, and it will be very nice, and the demon will be happy. We'll be happy. All the spectators will be happy. Yeah, or other than that, they'll come and save us. You know, they'll send a herd of wasps to chase away the people who are harassing you or something like that. You know, so the first thing out of this whole thing, I was thinking about this: what is the essential things that you have to inquire from about the spiritual master? And so I would say one of the most essential things is understanding this is chanting, how to improve our chanting of these two mantras like that. Okay, next slide. And this is number down, 11. Okay. But then Prabhupada says, if you want to preach, you know, you should read my books. Probably read my books, he said. And beyond that, of course, to accelerate the process, like Hansa Duda, he was saying one time he was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked him, he said, why do you think I've written so many books? And Hansa Duda, he said, well, Prabhupada, because it's such a good philosophy, you know. And he said, Prabhupada responded, no. See, I'm writing all these books to convince you to chant Hare Krishna. If you're already convinced to chant Hare Krishna, you don't have to read these books. They say at that point, Hansa Duda had this real deep realization. He wasn't convinced that in all circumstances he would chant. You know, his ego was still there in so many ways. Yeah. So yeah, this is another reason besides, you know, learning how to preach, to convince people to chant Hare Krishna. It's also for our own purification to accelerate the process. You know, we can have so many books. Prabhupada's saying is engage in hearing and chanting 24 hours a day. We will supply the prasad. But then he goes on to say, but you can't do it. You know? So therefore, hear and chant as much as you can. And then if you get to the point where you can't do any more hearing and chanting, then do whatever you can do for Krishna. Not dog hard, like that. So it's karma yoga. You know? The karma yoga then, you know, what's the word? Shinvatan Swakatakrish? No, it's the other one. By serving the great souls, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, we develop an attachment for hearing and chanting. And that's the process. Karma Yoga means the Prabhupada has given us so many, you know, ways to serve Krishna. We can build temples. We can do landscaping. We can do temple maintenance. We can, you know, build wonderful altars, you know. On and on like that. We can do book distribution. We can do management. You know, we can defend Christian devotees physically. You know, so many ways we can raise our family. So many ways. This is all Prabhupada showed us how to do all these things. So it all becomes bhakti yoga. Nastapreshu, Abhadeshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavata Yuta Moshloke, Bhakti Bhavati Naistaki. Anyway, we develop an attachment, you know, for hearing and chanting like that, by engaging in karma yoga. And so we have different levels of where we have to act, and we should be inquisitive about them. We should find our level, and then ask about, you know, how to operate properly on that level so we can go to the next level. So books, I was recommending books as one of those central processes for many people. And so I have some books here. I have Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we have one PowerPoint show we do sometimes called the Bhaktivedanta Library. And it shows, you know, it shows how many volumes of each book, one after another, on the PowerPoint show. And many times, of course, in the West, you know, devotees in America, the devotees have all these books. And so you bring them out and stack them up. Okay, here's the Yusupanishad, and then there's the Bhagavad Gita. So there's the hierarchy, too. Here's the Yusupanishad that goes to the Gita Upanishad. Gita Upanishad is a preliminary study of Bhagavatam. Put those there. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a Bhagavatam class. And Lord Chaitanya is showing us how to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. The Krishna books are the 10th canto. Light of the Bhagavad is one chapter from the Krishna book, pretty much. Nectar of Devotion is a summary of all these things. And Upadeshamrita is a summary of the Nectar of Devotion. And so all the letter books, conversation books, so you stack them out. You know, it's quite consistent. Physically quite impressive. You know? And so then I said, And some people say that Prabhupada didn't give you everything, didn't give us everything. And so one kind of new guy in the audience was looking at all this, and he said, thank God, thank God. Just looking at it, yeah, this is the books you got to study. And oh my God, yeah. So many books, and this is a whole thing to try and kind of, sort our way around them. When we're doing these Bhakti by Baba and Bhakti Shastri courses, the perspective we're trying to present is that these are things that, you're supposed to get your Bhakti Shastri diploma by the time you graduate from high school, and supposed to get your Bhakti by Baba diploma by the time you graduated from university. And so what are we doing? We're doing like an overview. We don't expect, I remember before, in the beginning of the Bhakti Shastri course, where we're going to study Bhagavad Gita, and it was like, that was it. We're never going to come back to it ever again. And so it was, the study guide was actually bigger than the Bhagavad Gita, as it is. It included all the lectures that Prabhupada gave and the references and stuff. It was basically like a, not more than a PhD thesis, really, on the Bhagavad Gita. But then we began to talk about, Vedic education is circular. Our questions are going to take us back to the same things again and again, but with more perspective, more depth. I've heard Prabhupada said when the Nectar of Devotion was first released, now read this book 6 times, and all your questions will be answered. Not that you say, what is this? What is this? What is this? No, go on. So it's a very important principle that our questions, they may be very sloppy in the beginning. Don't be embarrassed to ask stupid questions, as long as you're not too stupid. And then you get an answer, and the next time you come around to that same question, you have a better perspective on it. So all these books, and it's good to go through them all, go through Bhakti Shastri, then Bhakti by Baba, okay. And we're going through them all. And as we see the perspective, we begin to notice, okay, this is what I should focus on. This is good for my own purification. This is good for, my preaching. So our inquisitiveness, becomes intelligent and guided and motivated. And of course, when we get results like that, material nature is pushing us, then we become very inquisitive like that. So out of all these books, where do we start? Slide number 12, if you please, Master. Okay. Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says, Prabhupada says in the introduction, Rupa Goswami has given many other books, such as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vidagdha Madhava, and Lalita Madhava, but Upadeshamrita constitutes first instructions for neophyte devotees. So very nice. We've taken that somehow, rather become absorbed in that, and we have a hold of the tail of the elephant. And so from our perspective and our dharma and our relationship with Prabhupada ISKCON, that Upadeshamrita has been like this. It's been the first instruction. But of course, again, it doesn't go away. That means as we study it, then we begin to see how it links us to so many other books. Right in the preface, Prabhupada's giving almost his hierarchy. First study Upadeshamrita. It's like a summary of all of our culture. It goes from just geographic things of we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we're from Bengal, we're following Rupa Goswami who was there in this age. Then it goes right into sense control, how to associate with devotees to be able to execute that sense control. And then it goes to Raganuga Bhakti. And then Raganuga Bhakti is executed in Vrindavan, so it describes the hierarchy of Vrindavan. It goes back to a full perspective on different kinds of association again, terminating in Radharani and Radhakund, like that. And so it covers everything. It's a complete overview. And then if we go Nectar of Devotion, we find the same thing. But now Prabhupada says the complete science of Bhakti Yoga, like that. And Madhanadhar Maharaj's Waves of Devotion, I found it very useful then. And of course, we did a whole seminar on this, accredited class in Bangladesh for about maybe it was 7 years, and they started again online. But I learned so much about this particular thing and how it fits into the history. This is academic course. We actually look at the history of the Rasa Shastra and everything else. And Rupa Goswami fits into it very, very historically. Then after that, how it's actually manifest in the modern world in terms of theater and drama theory. And very nice, satisfying investigation. Okay, so Upadeshamrita is a summary Nectar of Devotion is a complete science. And then finally we go to, next we go to Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, which are demonstrations. Yeah. Summary, complete science, and Nirupa Goswami shows us how to use it. He combines together all these things and produces all these bhavas and interactions of sentiments and feelings and lamentation, exaltation, jubilation, you know, heroism, like that. You know? So very, also, other places, Prabhupada also mentions this, kind of like these three make a little brief curriculum, Upadeshamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and then the two dramas, like that. You know? So, yeah, it's kind of a little perspective on inquisitiveness and Prabhupada's books and approaching them. But of course, somebody else, you know, they're going to approach them in a different way. I know one devotee, Anantar Roop in Boise, he very, very much, you know, likes Lilamrita, you know, and for he's a very practical person. And of course, then he sees other books from that perspective and so on, and takes, you know, the different pastimes and activities in Lilamrita in terms of Prabhupada's other books like that. But that's his perspective, and I can see, you know, how some people that love to hear Prabhupada's pastimes as told by his disciples and collected and edited like that. It can be a very nice basis for life. Next slide, number 13. My lamp is shaking there. Okay, so if I'm kind of here, maybe finishing. Then it's very, very interesting, because what is the essence of all this knowledge? What are we trying to find out? So we have Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati. So Prabodhananda Saraswati was the uncle, the uncle of Jiva Goswami. No. The uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Yeah. And the brother of Venkata Bhatta? I think so. And of course, they were very high class, South Indian Brahmins, and Sanskrit educated, everything else like that. And he's an incarnation of Tunga Vidya. Tunga means the apex or the peak, and Vidya means knowledge. So she's the apex or the peak of knowledge. And as you're facing Radha Madhava on the altar in Mayapur, Tunga Vidya is the gopi on the extreme left like that. And she's more liberal. You know, we're following Lalita, and Lalita's a firecracker. She's like, if Krishna does anything to upset Radharani, he better watch out. Lalita's going to be right after him, you know. And he knows it, you know. On the other hand, Tunga Vidya's more liberal. Like, if Krishna's late for, you know, some kind of birthday party, if the gopis and Radharani are arranging a birthday party for Krishna, and Krishna's late, you know, then Lalita and everybody else are just hopping up and down on his head the second he shows up. Where have you been? You know? But Tunga Vidya's mood is more like, well, give the guy a chance. Come on, maybe he has a good explanation. So anyway, that it's interesting, because I think there's no criticism that Prabodhananda Saraswati is not a very pure follower of Lord Chaitanya and everything else, but our acharyas don't cite him so much. Maybe just because of this reason, his particular mood and perspective is different. You know? But anyway, he wrote, maybe 30? What we have is maybe 30 shatakas. And shataka means 100 verses. Jaya Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Ashtotara Shata. Asta means 8, and Shata means 100. So 108. He wrote like something like we have, with pure summer, maybe even be lost, like about, you know, 30 shatakas of 100 verses each. And again, very highly elevated Sanskritist and erudite, you know, Brahman, but he gave it all up and became a follower of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, gave up his formality of Raghunath's worship. So if we're asking him, you know, what is the essence of all this? What is the most refined and most transcendental and advanced knowledge you can give us? So here from Shataka 15, verse, starting at verse 73, and this is online. If you look at the Vrindavan Dham webpage, the whole thing is there, Vrindavan Dham Mahimita. And it's translated by Kushakrata. So we're getting this by the mercy of Kushakrata, if you know him. You know, he's our parampara. I shall tell you a mantra that is hidden from all the Vedas and is not manifested anywhere in most confidential scriptures. page down. Yeah, okay. When a person chants this mantra, the great spirit's perfections come before his feet. These are probably cities. And the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead stand in his hand. Yeah. 74. For a person who chants this mantra, there are no orders or prohibitions. And it's probably yama niyama. There's nothing. For a person who chants this mantra, there are no orders or prohibitions. A person who understands the dust of this mantra's lotus feet purify those who know the rules of the Vedas. So Brahmanas have so many purificatory processes, different pranayamas and do's and don'ts. You know? But if you chant this mantra he's giving us, you don't have to follow any of these. You automatically are purifying everybody else. Okay, let's go on here. 15. This mantra is the sweetest nectar. It is the auspiciousness of all auspiciousness. It is filled with all limitless, wonderful glory. This is Tungavidya talking to you now. It is the attainment of all attainments. I think Sarvagati Gati. Next one. Without, it is the ultimate goal of all goals. It is the wild bliss of all wild blisses. They say it is the secret of all secrets. Without thinking of anything else, day and night, chant this mantra. Okay, the next slide will give us the mantra. Radha! Very nice, huh? So, Radha, yeah. So he's a fanatic. It's not too surprising that Prabodhananda Saraswati Tungavidya is a fanatic. In the Vrindavan Dham Himamrita, he's talking about the glories of Vrindavan Dham. It's really, when you're reading it on the Brahma of Parikrama, it's really incredible. He says, if somebody tells me to leave Vrindavan, I shall cut out his tongue. If somebody tries to take me out by force, I shall kill him. Even if I'm so hungry and crying from pain and have to steal from others to live, I will still never leave Vrindavan. He says, anybody who has once seen the beauty of Vrindavan Dham and then goes to any other place of pilgrimage is like somebody who knowingly rejects Mahaprasadam to eat the excrement of a dog. This guy's a fanatic. Yeah. So, very, very nice, yeah. And through this whole thing, yes, here the Radharani, she's not revealed in the most confidential scriptures. In the Bhagavatam is so indirect, you know. But here, by the mercy of the Acharyas, if the inquisitive student is asking the right person, then it's being revealed, you know. You don't have to follow any, you don't have to follow the four principles, you don't have to get up from Mangal Arti. This chant, day and night, without stopping, this mantra, Radha. You know, of course, that's quite a task. And you may discover it's much easier to start getting up from Mangal Arti and start following the principles. You know. But he's presenting the most confidential yoga. And of course, Prabhupada, it was a Radhasthami day, I think it was in London. And Prabhupada said, this is Radharani's appearance day. He said, in the Maha Mantra, we are chanting Hare. This is Radha. He said, Radha, Hara, no difference. You know, same thing. So we're chanting. We're chanting Radhe, Radhe. But we're chanting Hare, 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 Hare. And very nice Hare Krishna, like that. So we're doing it. Let's go on. Next slide. He has a little more to tell us. This mantra is a flood of sweetness churned from the sweetest nectars. It is a precious flood of the wild sweetness of the bliss of pure love. Yeah, thanks to Kushakrata, he was able to do such nice translations. O fortunate one, who understands us? Who understands the meaning of this mantra that is a flood of bliss flowing into the heart? And last slide here, which is Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Okay, so it's kind of our little perspective on this, that, you know, Maharaj Pariksit has finished his questions, and I was kind of like summarizing, taking a step back and talking about, you know, please, I'm surrendered to you, so please tell me everything about these questions, and also please tell me about things I haven't asked. You know, he's very enthusiastic, Prabhupada says, about asking questions. And then from that, we have to, you know, penetrate, you know, into deeper and deeper and find our actual self-realization, you know, whatever that is. So, any questions, comments, complaints?
Raj, you made a lot of references to the Braj Mandala Parikrama. And the way you described it, it, on the one hand, it really attracted me to want to undergo this rite of purification. At the same time, you were kind of scaring us away from it, in that it's so austere. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Braj Mandala Parikrama, because I really don't know that much about it.
Well,
probably most of us don't.
Yeah, Lokanath Maharaj, of course, you know, he's the kind of Parikrama Acharya in ISKCON. He started it, and I think, see, the person, what's his name? He'll come back, I guess, yeah. He's called the Brajacharya. He was a contemporary of the Goswamis, very respected, you know, Vaishnava. But he did actually wrote the whole book. You know, I can't remember the name of it also, too. We go to his samadhi, everything like that. You know, Simi Bhatta. Anyway, he was trying to find, you know, the Parikrama of Vrindavan. And there's information in the Shastras, there's information from the Brijbasis, and there's also, you know, the Sadhu Drishya, the sadhus, they see things. So he was going around and he found Radhakund, Radhakund, Shamakund, and Dhavanalakund, and, you know, Ramagata, and all these places he was finding, and he was describing, you know, the whole course and how you're supposed to do it, what you're supposed to meditate on. And sometimes he couldn't find it or something, and the story is his deities would hop down and say, no, we know where it is, follow us. And so Narayana Bhatta Goswami. And so he gave the whole book, you know, which is the how to do the Braj Mandala Parikrama. And usually I think it's done right after Janmashtami. And other groups do it. There are many other groups that do it, come there, and also Brijbasis also organize groups. And so it's really intense. There's a very good book which Krishna Kshetra and Radhakraman recently gave me. It's by David Haberman, Haberman. And I think it's called the 12 Forests of Vrindavan. If you look on Amazon for his books, you'll find it. Haberman, Haber. And it's his experiences, you know, with the thing. He's an anthropologist, but he's a devotee too. You know, stuff is kind of, I think he joined Nimbark Sampradaya to avoid becoming criticized by joining Prabhupada. But he knows devotees everything. So anyway, his journey through the 12 forests. But he gives a very nice, interesting description of the thing like that. And so that's it. You know, Lokanath Maharaj organized it later in the year because that's very hot at that time. They do it on during the Kartik, and it starts on the Kartik day, you know, the first moon, the first day of Pratipat, first day of Kartik, and they head out and they follow the pretty much they don't go all the way in the interior parts because it's a little bit too long then, but they do the external part. It goes all the way around Vrindavan, and you walk about 12 maybe 13 kilometers each day, and of course the suggestion is to walk barefoot, so on. And you go all the way around Vrindavan, maybe in, 30 days times 15 kilometers. So it's 450 kilometers walking. And other parikramas like Radhanamars and stuff, you come back each day, you know. And so in some ways they're better organized because you hear the katha in the pandal in the temple room. And when you go out the next day, you know, you can see the places like that and a little bit of reminding and talking. Because many places, of course, it's very difficult to assemble, to discuss what's going on. And you come back and you have a shower and everything else. But on the Braj Mandala Parikrama with Lokanath Maharaj, he would stay in tents, these Indian cloth tents, and, you know, stay in ashrams and, you know, bathing with buckets in the fields was just a regular course of the thing like that. And many times we would stay right in the Brijbasis farmhouses with no windows, wooden windows, and And really, I mean, you get a chance to live with Bruce Bossy's in the little farmhouses with their animals and stuff. And it's just really, you go right down into, you know, Vrindavan Dham in many ways like that. And then reading and chanting and stuff along with it, you know. So I would say that, yeah, people say that it's the postgraduate course for the Mayapur Parikrama. But the thing is, my realization is that if you want to do it, then Radharani wants you to do it. And that's what it comes down to, is you really realize, you know, that you have to have the mercy of Radharani, and she's there. And, of course, we're getting it through the mercy of Prabhupada and the mercy of Gaunatayee. And so the deities go along with us the entire way like that. And you have regular programs morning and evening. And so, yeah, it's just that you should, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, I know many great gurus, I know many great books, he said, but as far as I'm concerned, there's no teacher like Vrindavan Dham. So it's one perspective on the elephant. And if somebody else goes out distributing books in the street, you know, hour after hour, day after day, you know, maybe that's more the Yuga Dharma. But in a sense, yeah, it really is nice, you know, for a certain kind of people. And they have shuttle buses now where you can go out, you know, and come back. And the bus takes you out in the morning, you catch up with the devotees and walk with them. So it's a very particular thing, and it's, you know, it's nice in many ways. It really is, you know. By the ways, yeah, there's problems and stuff. And then, but if you really, you know, if Krishna wants you to do it, and it's good for you, then okay, it's very, very nice austerity of being there with day after day in Vrindavan Dham.
Thank you for that description. It's sounding more attractive.
Hare Krishna, Hanumat Prasad Maharaj. This is Mahesh.
Mahesh. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Vrindavan Dham, I think there is a misunderstanding here. Vrindavan Dham is a mystical place. It is in the hearts of the pure devotees and the devotees of the Lord. It is not a physical place. If you go to Vrindavan, India, a physical place called Vrindavan, India, that is not really Vrindavan. The Vrindavan is in the heart of the devotee. That's why if you go to Vrindavan, India, it may be there or it may not be there. Because we are followers of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was here to tell others about Krishna consciousness. That's his mission. We are here to help him to tell others about Krishna consciousness. Any activity has to be related to that. So if we are not related to that, then we are not in Vrindavan. But we can be in New York City and be in Vrindavan. We can be anywhere in the world and be in Vrindavan. That is Vrindavan.
Okay.
Dandavas Maharaj, it's Vidog Dhamadava Das.
Yeah.
There's some truth to that. But if you've never been to the Dham in India, you may have some experience through Prabhupada's books, but it struck me when you said that, Maharaj, you know, quoting Prabodhana Saraswati. I mean, of course, we're meant to go to the Dham, but also we're meant to have some experience of the Dham, and like you said, the Parikram, it's austere. It's hard to stay on the Parikram. It's not an easy thing. It's a jugya, but to perform austerities like that in the Dham, to be trying to understand the Dham, you begin to appreciate the position of Vrindavan Dham, and I've been to many Tirthas, holy places in different parts of India, and there's some truth to what Prabodhana Saraswati is saying. There's something about Vrindavan that, you know, makes it sweeter and higher than all the other dhams. So it's true, it is a geographical location, so there has to be some consciousness when you go there. But having gone there, taking the trouble to go there, and to taking the trouble to go on Parikram, that will imprint you for the lifetime. you have some reference for when you go to the different parts of the scriptures that describe Vrindavan. You'll have some sort of reference also, some
it's
experience.
Like the deity worship, kind of Vrindavan, I would say, you know, Vrindavan Dham, that kind of the parikrama, it's part of Sevanam. But it's again, it's like for everybody, the age of Kali, the prescribed process is kirtanam. But you can't do that without some shravan. You know? So yeah, I agree with Mahesh's point of view the prescribed dharma for this time is shravan, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. But you see, the devotees who are a little bit more advanced, then Prabhupada engaged them in deity worship and yajna and following varnashram dharma. But that's not the basis. The basis of it is hearing and chanting. So if you go to Vrindavan and you're not engaged in hearing and chanting in the association of pure devotees, then yeah, you're following Bhakti Vinod's commentary, which is that you can be in the Dham or on the Dham. So you can go to a Hare Krishna temple, you know, and stuff, and still not appreciate what's going on like that, you know. But, you know, for us, then, you know, Prabhupada did that. He established a very great effort. He established our center in Vrindavan. And it was on his impetus that these different kinds of parikramas and visits to Vrindavan have been established. But they have to be, like Mahesh says, you know, on the basis of a Yuga Dharma like that. Now, as I was saying, everybody has their particular thing. Somebody else is going out doing book distribution all the time. He may never go to Vrindavan, but Vrindavan Dham comes to him. You know? Yeah.
Also, can we see the second to last slide? We didn't really get a look at that. Thank you.
Yeah. It's the whole book is online, Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita.
No, that's the third to last temple. Line. Second to last
Vrindavan temple. The Vrindavan temple website is called Vrindavan Dhamma.
Thank you.
And there list books. It's there.
Hare Krishna.
Hello?
This is Balabhadra Prabhu. If I could.
Balabhadra Boise.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thunderbats. That's Prabhupada. Thank you for the wonderful class. Maharaj, you made a brief mention in the earlier part of your class in reference to a line in the purport. Prabhupada says, the inquisitive on the part of a disciple is greatly necessary for the progress of devotee. And then you made a quick statement saying about one could be a non-progressive devotee. And then you made another quick statement about how, you know, we continue Krishna consciousness from our previous lifetime and we find ourselves not being progressive. I'm just going as best as I can by memory about what you had said. And so I'm just wondering, because I see myself as someone who's, you know, stagnant in my devotional life, but I'm still practicing every day, everything that I'm supposed to be practicing. And so it just seems to me like there's a vague line or a very fine line between non-progressive devotee and someone that's just hanging in there and that doesn't... He doesn't appear to be progressing, but he's not losing faith in the process. Can you discuss something about that real quick?
You know, Krista, the progress, well, you got to have a standard, you know. Adoshrada, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajanakri, and Nartanavriti seems to be like a very nice one. There are other ones too, Kanishta Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari. But if when the Prabhupada uses a lot, the Acharyas is that one. So we can see if we're progressing in terms of how we're going through that. You know, the Oshada, Sadhu Sangha, like that. You know? And other than that, I would say that a lot of this stuff is very, very specific, you know. And that's why we have so many books, you know. So many psychological perspectives different people have, you know, combinations, you know, pregnancy of Ditti in the evening, Chaivana and Sukanya, you know, so many things, you know. So, you know, specifically... You know, your position, like this and that and stuff. You know, I can't really give like a lot of detailed ideas about it, but because sometimes too, yeah, it's just that, you know, for example, we're having a change of heart. We don't see externally, we don't see a lot of change, and we think, oh, I'm still doing this, I'm still doing that, you know. But then you stop and look at it, and this is all external. you know, I'm still agitated by the office of sex, like this and that, I'm still this and that. But we realize at heart we've changed. The indriya, the manas, maybe they aren't so much influenced, but the buddhi is changing and our whole perspective has changed. And we know that when we die, these attachments and stuff are not going to have any root. So the big flood of death comes and just rips up the all these trees and just washes them away because they haven't got any root like that and so on. So that's one perspective. When we're judging ourselves, we've got to look at also in a more deeper perspective than that. Other than that, of course, it says, you know, by committing offenses to the chanting, one could go for many lifetimes and not get, you know, prema, maybe get some kind of impersonal liberation. So yeah, it is possible, and that's where, you know, being inquisitive, you know, to the spiritual master, reading Prabhupada's book with a purpose. Someone was talking about that before, reading with a purpose. Sure enough, we'll see like things which touch us indirectly, and then the super soul will help us, you know. And beyond that, we have a good association with so many devotees, you know, like that and stuff. So we can actually see, you know, like you're saying, what things are, if we are hung up, really, we're not, and rather than just like superficially hung up and making progress internally, and what those hang-ups are, and then we can, you know, start to deal with them like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who's talking.
I think it's Harsh Prabhu.
Haribol, do you have time?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, come on. You're calling from Bombay.
Okay. Can you relate this verse to 4.34 Bhagavad Gita, which talks about service, submissiveness, and then inquiry?
Well, I think the words are almost the same. Prapajan, how's it going? All these. Forgot the verse now. You will come back again. Yeah, he's talking about sacrifice, and he says all these different kinds of sacrifice. You know, result of course is to surrender to Krishna, like that. And to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get this knowledge and so on. So that verse I think is pretty simple. You know, there's not a lot of complication in it. Prabhupada's just saying that this is how we have to understand the truth. By approaching somebody who's seen the truth, of course, that's can be amplified upon. You know, approaching somebody who's seen the truth, what does that mean? You know, and I always remember in there, Prabhupada says that absurd inquiry and blind faith are both condemned. You know, so absurd inquiry means always just like, you know, just like speculations about religion. Religion is the most fun. So we're curious because it's the most best. People say, "Oh, my hobby is religion." My hobby is religion. Okay. So absurd inquiries. Prabhupada says in today's purport, we have to be serious. And the other thing then is blind faith, because no, Krishna gives us, you know, sufficient knowledge, and then we just have to act upon it. And that's where the bhakti comes in, like that. So our inquiries. Our investigation should actually be, you know, upon acquiring knowledge about things and acting upon that and getting more of a taste. And, of course, it goes to different levels of how we know, you know, rational knowledge, and then even starts to become, you know, introspective knowledge where we can feel Krishna's presence. But that's about all I can say. Tadviti panipatena paripashnena
sevaya. Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Maharaj, I have a question in that regard as well. Kind of on the same thread. As far as asking questions that are important and avoiding absurd questions, when we are inquisitive, like about the details of the Bhagavatam, trying to understand every aspect of it, could that be an absurd inquiries? Where we should actually just be concentrating on the essence of making advancement. If you want me to give an example, for instance, one devotee was complaining that, you know, like usually when I give classes or when I ask questions, they're always about the details of the Bhagavatam, you know, how big the universe is or... you know, like that kind of stuff. instead of questions about, you know, like, how are we going to be able to give up our false ego and how are we going to chant more purely. So you understand kind of what I'm asking, you know, is an absurd inquiry, even can it be in trying to understand the Bhagavatam in detail instead of trying to just focus in on how to make spiritual advancement?
No, well I mean, if chemistry is a science, well, speak of theology. You know, and so, yeah, there's going to be, we have to have both, no? We've got to have a general perspective on things, and then we also have to have practical detailed knowledge. Like if we're trying to go from Los Angeles to New York, you got to have a general idea that I'm going to head east and I'm going to go to San Francisco. I'm going to catch Highway 80. That'll take me across to Chicago. It falls apart there. Okay, I got a general idea, you know, and I need that. But then specifically, you know, I'm watching for a place to get off, to get gas and all these details, you know. So once we got our particular general plan worked out, and again, people are on different levels. And so once you figure out, okay, I'm on this level, this is what I need, this is where my progress is, you know. I'm not on this level. I'm not ready to surrender to, you know, full-time book distribution and everything else. But I'm beyond this level. You know, okay. This is my level. Okay. So you got your general perspective. And then you need to start acquiring details for your particular progress at that point. And also maybe for preaching to people at certain points and stuff like that. So I would say detailed knowledge is not it's we're wrong. And again, Maharaj Pariksit, if you look at the questions about in the fifth canto, which we're studying now, this Bhakti Baba thing, it's like that's where Sukadeva Goswami answers. It's almost like item for item, you know, for the question he asks, the mountains, the rivers. And but Maharaj Pariksit prefaces it by saying that by understanding the Virat Roop, by concentrating on the Virat Roop with attention, one becomes fixed in the mode of goodness, and then he can understand the material world as the glories of the Lord, and he can understand the more subtle glories also, like that. So that in that sense, like you're giving this example of like 1 millimeter dot on a piece of paper is equal to this, you know, the size, I guess, was the earth or something, right? In comparison to the metropolitan size of New York City. You know? Yeah, for people who've been trained in that perspective and everything else, it gives them, you know, a very practical appreciation of how God, big God is and everything else. And one great practical example. You know, Acha Harvins ago, Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krota Vegam. Okay. So we probably says, you know, we have to give up all these kind of different things which cause problems. So he says, when we shouldn't take LSD, you know, marijuana, cocaine, opium. So you know that Bhaktisiddhanta never included LSD in his list of Achyahara. You know, so it's got to come down to the practical world where people are. Then it came down to Mexico. Actually, it was Ecuador, yeah. In the Sunday feast, one lady said, you know, she asked a question, about 40. She said, all in Spanish, you know, I've got your books and I'm so enthusiastic. I've been a evangelical Christian for all this time, but your books are so nice and so much more detailed and enthusiastic. But I have a big problem, you know. And what's the problem? He said, what's the problem? She said, well, in your books, it says that people take bread to satisfy illicit desires, you know. And I have a bakery, you know. And so you probably already caught it. You speak Spanish. So he said, we're saying, well, it doesn't say that, you know, take bread to satisfy illicit desires. She said, no, I read it right there. And so she opened the Upadeshamrita, and Prabhupada says that illicit desires are satisfied by haritaki, pan, and these other things. So pan, of course, is the stuff people chew in India, but in Spanish, pan means bread. So, of course, it was a very nice, hilarious answer. But that's why I said parampara. Prabhupada had to add LSD, and then we have to explain these other details like that and so on. So we have to be able to understand the details in terms of where we are like that. And so for one person, it's cosmology. I've been reading Sadhaputta's book on this thing. I had a whole bunch of comments on your class yesterday, but I just can't get around to them in terms of the yojana and everything else. But for me, yeah, it's also very, very purifying for my intelligence because I have a, you know, a physicist's intelligence to some degree. So if it works, if it purifies you, I don't think it's an absurd inquiry. What's absurd for one person is not absurd for another person.
Okay, along that line, another detail. You mentioned about asatarasata. So I realize that I don't even know what that means, 108. What does that mean, 108 glories of the spiritual master? What is that 108? What's the significance?
Well, the word 108, of course, it's ubiquitous. So many cultures have it. I've seen this thing. Some guy, like an honest guy, going through it, and he said there's so many people explain what it is, but he's never seen any reason why it's spiritual. And I also have them, too, because there's so many interesting things about the number. It occurs in Norse religion. It occurs so many places, you know. But Prabhupada, all I've ever seen Prabhupada say is that this means that he's spiritual. And I've also heard that it means that we should say Shri Mahan 108 times, you know. Shri 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 Prabhupada. Like that. So that's about all I know, because I don't know much more than that.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, like you say, I offer my obeisances 108 times. So you're offering your Shri 108 times. That's how much you appreciate.
That's
okay.
I never heard Prabhupada say that, but, you know, it's one.
Oh, that's a nice interpretation. I like that.
Oh, well. One thing is that I would suggest in terms of your look, I don't think that, have you looked on the Wikipedia for Yojana?
No. I know that Sataputta says it's about 8 miles.
Yeah, but if you look on the Wikipedia, what you're going to find very interesting, he actually quotes this in his book too a little bit. There's more detail there. Yojana is composed of so many crotia, which is composed of so many pasta, which is composed of so many cubits, which is composed of angula. And angula is the width of a finger. Like that, you know. And so Sataputta deals with a little bit. And this is where I think from cultural anthropology is a broader perspective, because Prabhupada says the size of the super soul is, he says in the second canto there, where we were before, 8 inches. But the actual Sanskrit is this measurement, you know, from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the finger there. And he also says that in different animals it's different, you know, the size in the elephant, the size in the ant, so on. So the measurement is there, but it's in proportion to a certain perspective. So that's one point I would toss into this whole thing is that the yojana that they're talking about, really we have to consider that maybe it's at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. It's from a different perspective. And even if we go on measuring things in yojanas, we're talking about the coverings of the universe. When we come to the psychological elements, it starts to become bizarre, you know. So we have... My mind is 2 miles big. My thoughts are three inches, you know. You know, at that level, there's no space as we know it now. And how big is Microsoft Word? How big is chemistry? You know, but yeah, they have form, they have structure. You can measure them in terms of different things. So that's kind of the perspective on yojanas. And another thing is, what's his name? E.T. Hall. Edward Thomas Hall, his books are just incredible on cross-cultural studies and space and time perception. It's so interesting to read, and you see how different cultures have different perceptions. And because of that, I think if I feel like more in resonance with how Prabhupada actually was perceiving, you know, time and space and stuff like that. So his books are very, very, very nice in terms of understanding the structure of the universe. Okay. So I guess maybe we should stop here, no?
Okay. Does anyone else have anything?
I just want to make a quick comment. Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Jana Spriha.
Ah, hi, Bo.
The 108, each planet has a frequency, and our planet is 432. So the 108 is 1/4 of the frequency of the planet, and you know, everything is sound, everything is created by sound, and that is the frequency of the planet.
Yeah, even the four yugas, 432,000 is 4,000 times 108. Yeah. 1 to the power of 1 times 2 to the power of 2 times 3 to the power of 3 is 108. when Ronald Reagan was planning his MX missile system within the U.S., he planned for 108 MX missiles. If you take the name Ronald Wilson Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan, and rearrange the letters, there's not one extra letter or one letter short, and it spells out, you can spell out, insane Anglo warlord. So with that highly deeply philosophical point, I'll say goodbye to everybody and look forward to hearing somebody else talk on Monday or before that.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Rod, hey.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.